On this episode, we talk about childhood anxiety. Now, back in the 80s, we would have called this a very special episode, right? Like, they would only do this every once in a while, and then it would all get resolved in a single episode. Well, that's not what's going to happen here, but at least we will learn more about childhood anxiety. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. Today, I am joined by Dawn Friedman, and she is a therapist and parent educator. Dawn, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, parent educator, I like that title because I feel like as a parent, I'll tell you a quick story. Just so when we brought my daughter home, as we're first-time parents, we're like, okay, we've got to give her a bath. Well, it's kind of cold because it was, you know, winter when she was born. And we heated up the bathroom, got all this kind of steam in there. We're like, oh yeah, that'll heat up the bathroom. That'll be good. That'll be great. And we did that. I don't know what we were thinking. We did that. We ran out of hot water, so we couldn't use the bath. Later on, she had like, you know, thrown up a little bit, right? And we're like, what do we do? We called the nurse and said, no. After they eat, sometimes just stuff comes out. Did a projectile like across the room? Like, no. I don't know how many times we called the like little advice nurse thing, but we did it like at every possible moment where we just felt like we didn't know what we were doing. So there's that, right? But then you get into those were the physical things. You're talking more about the mental health things, which I do feel like, I mean, I would love it if parents had to take a class to have a baby, like to know like what to do and how to handle certain situations.
First of all, I have to say you're making me flashback because I became a parent educator before I had kids.
And oh, okay.
And I used to tell the parents then, listen, I'm an expert on child development and you're an expert on your child. And between the two of us, we're going to figure this out. And then when I had kids, I realized that was the right answer because people are experts on their own children. They don't always know that. They don't always trust their own expertise. And so my hope as a parent educator is I'm helping them connect with their wisdom, helping them notice the things they already know about their child, and then give them sort of shore up maybe where they're missing some information. And so specifically, I work with a lot of parents of anxious children, and we're not born knowing how to parent anxious children. So they come to me and say, I'm struggling with my child in this way, and I'm going to help them figure out what's the information they need to have so that the expertise they have on their child, they can just shore that up and become even better and more connected to their kids.
You know, I would think with the social media, with all of the events of the world, the pandemic, climate change, that perhaps we're seeing more anxious children. Is that kind of hunch true?
I certainly think so, but I also think it has to do with kids today, and especially teens, are much more literate about mental health. Mm-hmm. And so some of them are identifying when they're struggling and coming to their parents to share. And thankfully, parents today seem to listen to their kids differently than my parents were able to listen to me. And so there's more collaboration between parents and kids. And so I think that also, not only are kids maybe more anxious, but we're more willing to listen to them that they're anxious and need help. Whereas my parents might have said, you know, suck it up, buttercup, because.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was like this thing back in the, you know, I remember in the 80s hearing somebody say like, oh, they're going to therapy. Like it would turn into this whisper thing, right? Like, and now it's like, oh yeah, I go to therapy, you know, and it's like become this thing where it's like perfectly acceptable. Back then, it just didn't feel like it was acceptable.
Yeah, I think in the Breakfast Club, everybody but maybe Emilio Estevez would probably have been getting some therapy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, maybe yeah. Judd Nelson wouldn't. He was kind of neglected.
Especially the principal. So, okay, anxiety, raising a child with anxiety. Let's talk about that first, I guess, from the parent side.
Well, very often they're not going to be able to say that. Very often it's going to be that there are some behavior problems. So if a younger child might be melting down, older kids may demand a lot of reassurance. There's very specific things that will bring a parent to me. And one of the big ones is a child who won't leave the family bed or wants their parents to stay with them. And and we're thinking, okay, well, 4 or 5 year olds, no, these are like 10 and 12 year olds who are having trouble getting to sleep and are needing to come out and check with their parents or asking their parents to stay with them. And that is way more common than people realize. And then the other thing that often happens is school refusal. And school refusal can be outright, I'm not going to school. It can also be kids who drag in the morning, who dread it, who cry. I've had kids who ask their parents to homeschool them. So it can look like behavior issues and avoidance, meltdowns and tantrums. And very often that's actually anxiety.
Yeah. So how does a parent identify that? Like, where do we know? Because I mean, we've all seen as a parent, right? You've seen the tantrums, you've seen like all of those things at one point, right? Something has happened where you know, they don't want to go to school a particular day or something. At least I remember when I was a kid, I did all those things too.
Maybe you had anxiety.
Maybe I had anxiety, right? So how do we know? How do we know that it's anxiety?
Well, I think the biggest indicator is, are you fed up with it? Is your child fed up with it? Is your life in some way getting restricted? So do you feel like you need to limit things that are happening in your day or your child's day, or control it in some way? Are you trying to get ahead of what you think of as going to be a tantrum or a meltdown? Are you having to hold their hands a lot longer than might be developmentally appropriate? And we don't always realize these things until we look around and say, other people don't seem to be trapped in the same way that I feel trapped by this. Other people don't seem to be tiptoeing around their child the way that I am. Other people don't seem to be as worried as I am about my child. And that's a good indicator that maybe you need to take a look at what's going on and get some help with it.
With the children that you're working with, are you seeing that they're self-diagnosing?
They might not have the language for anxiety. They might. And really, it depends on, again, how much is the family using that language. And honestly, a lot of kids are diagnosing themselves on TikTok, because there's a lot of mental health stuff happening on TikTok. Now, sometimes they're misdiagnosing themselves, but sometimes it is pointing out that something is going on for them. But the other thing is, and this is the saddest part, is very often when you get kids this age with pretty severe anxiety, they feel kind of hopeless. They feel incapable of doing these things that other kids their age seem to be doing. But there's also kids, and this is very tricky, who are doing really, really well, who have that high functioning anxiety, that perfectionist, all A's, really accomplished, but they have a lot of headaches and stomach aches. And those kids, they get diagnosed later, often not until college, when they just sort of fall apart. But the kids who are really, really afraid of failure are often dealing with anxiety.
So if you think that you've diagnosed yourself, right, you think that, okay, maybe I have this, what do you do next?
Well, I tell parents that and this is all my clients, not just parents, adult clients and the teen clients, because teen clients diagnose themselves like crazy. I had one kid who asked for and received a DSM, which is the diagnostic manual, for Christmas, and was diagnosing all of their friends. And my feeling is that diagnosis is meant to serve you. It's not supposed to limit you. It's not supposed to shame you. It's meant to serve you. So if looking at your experience through the frame of that diagnosis serves you, then it's a good diagnosis. But generally speaking, you don't meet criteria if something in your life isn't suffering. So your functioning, your relationships, your something in your life has to be not going well in order to get a clinical diagnosis. So that's the first thing we look at. I mean, if things are going well for you, then maybe you're anxious. We are all anxious, but you don't have an anxiety disorder.
Right.
On the other hand, maybe you're anxious enough that you could use some support even if you don't meet criteria. That's kind of an individual discussion to have.
And then what about like the anxiety attacks? What is an anxiety attack?
Okay, so the DSM defines it as having 4 or more of the symptoms that include, and I'm not going to remember all of them, nausea, headache, shaking, sweaty, heart palpitations, trouble breathing, a feeling of choking, it can include a feeling like I'm going to die. So that's the cliche of someone who goes to the ER and thinks they are having a heart attack, but also a feeling of derealization or depersonalization, which is the feeling of I'm outside of myself. Nothing seems real. I'm outside of time. It's a really scary feeling. My guess is that we underdiagnose anxiety attacks in younger children because they're not able to say, I'm having this particular kind of feeling. They don't have the words to say, I'm feeling shaky and I'm going to pass out. They just flip out.
Right. Is there an increase in this now versus before because we're like more willing to talk about this?
I think that is part of it. I also think we do live in anxious times.
Yeah. And that's exactly where I'm going. You look at the news and there's so much out there that you can be upset about. Mm-hmm. So how do we, as parents, with that kind of as the setting, how do we raise kids so that they're not going to fall into this and be overly anxious about something like that?
Well, that's a great question. And one of the things that you're talking about, it's making me think too that anxiety is catching and it's supposed to be. So I always tell people, imagine a watering hole and there's all those gazelles around it. And one gazelle hears the lion rustle in the grass and lifts their head up. And then the whole herd lifts their head up, right? I mean, we've seen that on nature specials. Well, we catch each other's anxiety too. So one of the things parents can do is try to manage their own anxiety, taking care of how the media that we're consuming, taking care of how we take care of ourselves helps create more calm in our home. Because again, anxiety is really catching. So one of the first things parents can do is figure out how to manage their own anxiety and think about what that means in terms of it's a paradigm shift, really anxiety treatment. There's some really specific things you do, some very directive things, but ultimately it's a paradigm shift of how do we live with the great uncertainty and unknown of being a human in the world today. We all have to learn how to do that.
Right. This sounds like I'm contradicting what I just said of like it's a more difficult world to live in. But it seems like because we're more focused on mental health, because we have, you know, we have podcasts out there, we have YouTube, we have, well, TikTok, as you said, we have all these places to go where we don't have to feel isolated or feel like we don't get information. I was just talking to a doctor about cancer treatments, right? And he's like, the support for cancer is so much better now because you have the online groups, you have the videos that they can watch, you have like so much more knowledge out there. I mean, do you feel the rates are higher now, but we're more prepared to deal with that now?
We do have more access. And my only concern is that a lot of social media focuses on kind of the negatives of it or the identity. So when I get a teenager who's been diagnosed with anxiety, their anxiety has become part of their vision of themselves. It becomes part of their identity. And so one of the things I'm really encouraging them to do is to, first of all, anxiety is really treatable. It is really responsive to treatment. And so you can do that work, that paradigm shift, and learn a new way to function in the world. And there's not really enough of that on social media. And I get it because often the people who are doing the kind of education and information, they're telling people you need to get help, right? So necessarily they're saying, oh my gosh, you're anxious, you need to get help. So they're really focusing on you're anxious, here's all the ways you're anxious, here's all the way it's getting into your way to inspire you to get help. But they're forgetting to say, listen, you can learn how to manage anxiety. You can learn how to deal with it. It is an aspect of who you are, but you are not your anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And you say the treatments are great. What are the treatments now?
So it's CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is the treatment of choice for anxiety. It's got a strong research base. Some people need and benefit from medication, not all people. Specifically, when we're talking about anxious children, we have found that the best interventions are with the parents because the parents are really shaping the way the children face up to their anxiety, which is not the same thing as saying it's the parents' fault. It is absolutely not. It's just that parenting an anxious child takes a different set of skills, and parents just need to learn that.
So we've talked about treatment. What about prevention? Like, what can you do in the early years of your child's life to help possibly prevent this from happening?
I think that's tricky because, first of all, you can't make someone be anxious, really. I mean, you could traumatize someone and give them PTSD, mm-hmm. and then they would have some anxiety. But generally speaking, you cannot force someone to have anxiety. You're either born with a brain that is vulnerable to anxiety or you're not. So your child might develop anxiety regardless of what you do. But what you can do is learn some of these basic CBT tools that will help you face up to your child's anxiety, to help them learn how to manage to be in a world. The big thing with anxiety and parents is that we unintentionally start accommodating their anxiety. So Dr. Eli Lebowitz has developed the SPACE program. He's at the Yale Child Study Center, and he specifically has the program that works directly with parents, and it's based on a ton of research about this. And it makes sense because if you have a child who is not prone to anxiety and you say, oh, listen, I'm going to hold your hand when we walk by that barking dog, that child who is not prone to anxiety will go, thanks, Mom, that was a big help, and now I can do it on my own. If the child is prone to anxiety, they'll go, oh my gosh, I really can't handle this. I need my mom to hold my hand every time we walk by the dog. So you can see how this is parenting that makes sense. But mm-hmm. if you have a child with anxiety, then you get kind of stuck in that pattern.
Gotcha. So is it a good idea or is it a bad idea to kind of practice the cognitive, the CBT? Is it better to practice that as a parent, whether you know or not that your child is anxious?
Well, you know, the thing is about CBT is kind of everything is CBT. Most of the really good self-help books, just the random people like Glennon Doyle, that's all CBT, because CBT is really about finding a more productive way of looking at the world. It's shifting your mindset and learning how to see the world in a way that works for you better. So some of us are practicing CBT without even knowing it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the more we learn how to take the world and figure out how to see things in a way that lets us get through those challenging times, sure, that's better for all of us.
We've talked about the parents. What about siblings? If you have a sibling that's a little more anxious than the other sibling, like there's a dynamic there as well. How do you as a parent handle, you know, both of those situations?
That's a good question. And you make such a good point too, that you've got a child very often that's more demanding than another child, and hopefully mm-hmm. they trade off so you're never totally slammed at once with both of them. With anxiety, usually there is one child that is more demanding and has more intense needs because of their anxiety and often the behavior problems that come with anxiety. And also anxiety, like I said, it's catching. So if you have one child who has developed anxiety, then the whole family may just feel sort of off kilter, including siblings. And then finally, children do imitate each other. We learn how to function in the world by watching each other. So again, you cannot make a not anxious child develop an anxiety disorder, but a not anxious child can develop anxious behaviors depending on what's happening in the family, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Can you dig into that a little bit?
So basically, anxiety disorders are more common in certain temperaments, and very specifically, a temperament, it's a brain that is more likely to see danger, which is great. It's really terrific if you're in a zombie apocalypse and you have you're more likely to see danger, you're going to be safer in a zombie apocalypse. It's not so great when you're growing up pretty safe and sound and you're still looking for danger everywhere. There's something called information processing bias, which is you're more likely, if you have information processing bias, to see danger in neutral situations. So your parent says, hey, could you get in here and help me unload the groceries? And they think, oh my gosh, my parent's mad at me. And maybe they snap back at the parent. Why are you so mad at me? Why are you bossing me around? That can be a sign of information processing bias and a more negative negative way of looking at the world. If you don't have that more negative way of looking at the world, if you are not primed to scan your environment for danger, you're just less likely to develop an anxiety disorder. That's just the way brains work.
The parent education program that you have. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So specifically, we're helping parents figure out where are they stepping in too soon or too often, thinking that they're supporting their child's anxiety and helping them figure out that actually they're making things worse. They're cementing their child's anxious way of being. So we dig into that, we figure out where that's happening, and then we figure out what to do instead. And it's big work because if your child is struggling, you want to help them. And sometimes the way you think you're helping is not helpful. And it is very difficult to stop doing those things, for one, because as parents, it can be painful not to reach out and do the thing that we know would make our child's life easier. And two, our kids really want us to keep on holding our hands when we walk by scary dogs. And they will flip out when we pull back from that. And so there's the education piece and then also the support piece to get parents through those tough times. As their children experience success, their parents also get to see them experience their success, and the whole family can shift their thinking about what that child is capable of and then can continue building on that. And at the same time, we're teaching them cognitive behavioral therapeutic tools. They're not doing therapy with their kids, but the kinds of activities and resources and ideas that they can start bringing that thinking into their family culture so that they can shift everybody's thinking to be more supportive.
Okay. Is that individualized or is it more like a group setting or is it just purely online?
It's purely online. They go through the education program at their own pace, and I'm always available to answer any questions, to give them some direction, to give them feedback, but they take it at their own pace. And then there are live events where they can directly ask me questions. They can ask Nice. Those questions anonymously, and I'm being more specific about what people can do. And then my hope is they feel less alone because parenting an anxious child can feel really isolating. People will say, your 10-year-old's still in the bed with you. You're just too easy on him. You need to be tougher. That you've created this. And it's, you know, that's none of that is true. And they need relationships with people who say, I get it. I totally get it. I get how you got here. I get why you thought this choice made sense at the time. And there's no judgment about what that family is doing at any given time.
Nice. And the thing is, it's like just being a parent is somewhat isolating, right? Like you don't know, like and the way that your parenting style versus somebody else, it's so different many times, even with the people that you're close friends with, it's very different. It depends on how, you know, you were raised and how, you know, like what you want to change about how you were raised or whatever.
And parenting anxious kids is so hard. And unless you've done it, you don't know how hard it is. And what's that line that a parent's only as happy as their least happy child? They're in pain already. Like who's going to pile on them? That's not helpful.
I totally interrupted you when we were talking about your program, the parent education program that you have. We need to tell everybody listening how to access that. How do they get to that?
Well, they can check out childanxietysupport.com and read about it there. While you're there, you can also schedule a time to talk to me if you just want to learn more about the program. I am not going to push you there if I think your child and you would be better served by something else, and I'm happy to connect you with other resources. But I can tell you a little bit about more about how it works and talk to you about whether or not you think it might be a good fit for you and your family.
Awesome. And we will put a link to that and various other sources that we discussed during the interview in the podcast description. Dawn, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I had such a great time talking to you.
And thank you for listening, subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you and thank you for rating this podcast and sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. And we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. Next week, we are going to talk with a parent that adopted a child that it turns out the child had reactive attachment disorder, something that I had not heard about before, but it actually has been in the news a bunch. And we are going to talk about that on the next episode of Learning More. more. If you've got something that you would like to learn more about, let us know, and it just might become a future episode. Submit your ideas and comments at learningmorepodcast.com. You can also see all of the links and all of the shows that we've done over the past, 50 or so episodes right there on our website. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.